feels good. Forget, I'm not sure I could. They say time heals everything, but I'm still waiting. I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I paid a price.
Well, welcome, America. Tim Wingate here, sitting in for the traveling Michael Herzog. I am so happy to be back with you. I want to thank Mike for another opportunity to substitute for him. We've got a great program for you today. I have, if you've seen the email announcements, we tried to put them out and about, that a really, really excellent American, a guy who I just love his writings. I've been just immersed in a lot of his material, and I find him as a true treasure in American jurisprudence as well as opinion, and constitutional lawyer, guy who is just absolutely, you know, the top of the line here. Dr. Edwin Vieira Jr. will be joining us, and we are going to be talking for the next 2 hours about his concept of constitutional homeland security, as opposed to the version that we are being given by this administration, this rogue administration, if you will. He is actually pointing out what constitutional homeland security is and how we can go about to resurrect it, to restore it. And I think that that is just the absolute thing that we need to do, because face it, America, we're heading for a crisis point, and we're heading toward a tipping point. And the first one to that tipping point is going to be the one who's on top, and we free-loving constitutional Americans need to be at that point first. Otherwise, ladies and gentlemen, we are heading for some hard times, and I don't think any of us want to see it, because, quite frankly, I don't think a lot of Americans are emotionally, morally, or philosophically prepared to enter into a conflict with their fellow Americans, something that could be as bad as the war between the states if we don't get this taken care of in time. So we are going to be going to Ed in a few minutes here. I also have with me friend of mine and also aficionado of Edwin Vieira Jr.'s writings, my friend Rick from Chicago. Rick, are you with us?
Hello. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're here. Great.
All right, am I coming through clearly?
Yes, you are.
Okay, I'm very excited about Edwin Vieira being on the program, and I can't wait to talk to him.
Excellent. And ladies and gentlemen, just to finish up a little housekeeping as we, from last Friday's program, I started off and I realized we were running out of time. And I was talking about a little quiz, a little test called the F Factor. And I'm going to get into that, just as 7 questions, and you can take them down and give you the possible answers. Very easy to score, very simple. And you'll find out what side of constitutionality and, let's say, fascism you fall on. So, nonetheless, we will be back, I believe, in a few seconds. Carrie, did I hear the chords? There we go. I thought I heard them. You need to pot that up for me a little bit so I can hear it. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in 3 minutes here on the American Awakening. Don't go anywhere.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200.
The Healing Formula is an all-natural, patent-pending wound and skin care formula developed mainly for the treatment of pressure sores and diabetic ulcers. The formula was developed by a home caregiver with more than 30 years' experience. We use the finest ingredients available, including certified organic aloe vera gel with all the beneficial enzymes intact and food-grade hydrogen peroxide. The Healing Formula works from the inside out, oxygenating the affected area, stopping the spread of infection, and decreasing pain while promoting healing. Call 1-800-357-2944 or visit HealingFormula.com. The Healing Formula has proven effective in other areas of skin care as well, such as abrasions, rashes, and the treatment of pyorrhea, gingivitis, ear infections, and much more. The Healing Formula comes with an unconditional money-back guarantee if you're not completely satisfied. We offer a free sample to all nursing homes, home caregivers, and nurses. It is our sincere hope that the Healing Formula will help you or your loved ones to avoid any more unnecessary pain. Call 1-800-357-2944 or visit HealingFormula.com.
David J. Smith for Newswatch Magazine. Did you know that one goal of international communism was to get our young people's mind off religion by getting them onto sex? By destroying the morals of the younger generation, America would eventually become ripe for revolution without understanding why communism wanted to make young people soft and easily controlled. Have we witnessed this transformation of our young people away from God and the Bible to immorality? We'd like to help you understand how these things are coming to pass by offering you an absolutely free one-year subscription to Newswatch Magazine. Just call our toll-free number, 1-800-516-8736. That's 1-800-516-8736 to request your subscription. Call now. Operators are standing by to receive your call.
Okay, we're back, America. Tim Wingate here on the American Awakening, substituting for Michael Herzog on the wonderful Republic Broadcasting Network. I tell you, folks, you need to go to the website for Republic and take a look at some of the great ads and things that are on there. There's some real good material that you will need in the coming days. All right, as promised, the seven questions for the F factor. And this is really, really simple because it's an important issue. Number one, do groups of people have rights? Yes or no? Two, are all kinds of people intrinsically, one, equal, or two, unequal? Three, do all kinds of people have A, or one, privileges, or B, rights? Four, who has more rights? A, the group, or B, the person? A, B, one, two, you know, same thing. Two different answers. Five, are rights, one, extrinsic, or B, or two, intrinsic? Six, is group membership, one, voluntary, or two, compulsory? And seven, what is the function of a group? One, to provide for members, or two, to help members provide for themselves? Those are the seven questions. Very, very simple. I think you can probably figure out the correct answers to these. But if you are having some trouble with that, here you go. Number one, if you answered A, yes, give yourself plus one. If you answered B, no, minus one. Number two, A, if you said equal, that's minus one. B, unequal, that's plus one. Do all kinds of people have rights? Number three, A is privileges, plus one. B, the answer, rights, minus one. Four, who has more rights? A, the group, plus one. B, the person, minus one. Are rights A, extrinsic, plus one, or B, intrinsic, minus one? Six, is group membership A, voluntary? That'd be minus one. B, would be compulsory, plus one. And seven, what is the function of the group? A, to provide for members, plus one, or B, to help members provide for themselves, minus one. You just simply add those up based on the answers that you have. You're either plus or minus. The whole idea of that was to determine which side of the scale you're on, because those answers are weighted on the basis of constitutionality and weighted on the basis of the five principles of the Declaration of Independence. And I think you'll find out, just give yourself a little score, if you're really constitutional, you'll be in the minus seven area. If you're semi-constitutional, you'll be up higher. Perfect score is minus seven. If you are a full-blown, ready-to-rock-and-roll fascist, you'll be, I would say, at least two or three plus on up. Anyway, Rick.
Yes, sir.
Just a little fun, finishing up from last week.
I kind of like the fact that you brought that up, because I'm thinking to myself that, whether it's 1,000 people or 1 million people, they have no more rights than one individual person has.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, And one of the things that we were talking about last week, and I'm glad you reminded me, because I had read Edwin Vieira's article on News with Views. And by the way, folks, you can go to newswithviews.com, and they have a whole archive of Edwin's writings, and they are absolutely magnificent. And we were talking last week, Rick, a little bit about the pandemic of police brutality. And you reminded me of Leashing the Mad Dogs article that he wrote for September 30th, which is just another excellent example of why we need to have the reinstitution of the militia of the several states. The the constitutional homeland security is opposed to this situation that we have. And ladies and gentlemen, I must encourage you, please go and get a hold of this. And I hope we'll talk a little bit more about this. And without any further ado, I want to bring Dr. Vieira up. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, we will be taking some phone calls, but we will be taking phone calls in the second hour of the program. I want to be able to let Dr. Vieira lay some really good groundwork here on the program today on what this is all about and why it is important, why it's necessary. So welcome, Dr. Ed. How are you today?
And Rick, glad to be on the show with you.
Edwin, thank you. I can't tell you how excited we are.
Well, I hope there's that enthusiasm
really
in the audience. Those are the people we have to get to.
Excellent. Well, as you heard me lead in, Ed, that the your article that you wrote about leashing the mad dogs really, I think, is so contemporaneous for us right now, because we see this plethora, this pandemic of police brutality. And this whole I loved how you blended this, the idea of the militia of the several states, into that this would curb this police brutality if it was up, running, and enforced. How can we do that?
well, where do you want to start at this? How can we do it from the direction of revitalizing the militia, or after we have a militia revitalized, how does that deal with these problems? I suppose the more direct answer to that particular question of police brutality is that so many people see themselves as somehow inferior to, separate from, and unable to deal with in any legal fashion these paramilitarized police forces that are springing up all over the country. I think, as I point out in my article, obviously you have these situations where some uniformed officer is aggressing against a citizen, clearly out of line in any way of legally describing his behavior. But for the citizen to resist that attack opens him up to the potential of charges of resisting arrest, obstructing justice, assault and battery. You know, you can run down that list of potential charges that can be brought against him. So you have that real difficulty that the level of self-protection has been drastically reduced. And then the other check and balance, which of course is a prosecution of these malfactors, either internally within police departments or externally by the city, county, or other local prosecutors, is for all intents and purposes not there. I mean, we read about episode after episode of this kind of situation, and is it ever followed by some significant criminal trial or other serious disciplinary action? Very, very infrequently. And, of course, that's because, as far as I've been able to tell of my years practicing law, at least in the legal profession, I don't always practice a lot of criminal law, but I've observed it, there seems to be a recognition on the part of both the prosecutors and the police of, well, we'll scratch your back if you'll scratch ours. We're all in this together, and the citizens are, in a sense, our opponents. And so we don't want to engage in any kind of close scrutiny of what either one of us is doing. Well, when that check and balance breaks down, of course, then it's an incentive for more of that unsatisfactory behavior to occur. And, of course, we're seeing it. I mean, when I wrote that article, it was really the result of having seen, I think as you put it, a plethora of these, epidemic of these instances that had all come out at once within about a week or so. They had hit the internet, and I said, well, this is going to be in the mind of the readers, people who look at News with Views, and it will be something that will be very topical. But it's not something that's new. It goes back quite a ways. We see it now accelerating because of this desire by the people in Washington to create a top-down structure of Homeland Security all the way from the Department of Homeland Security to the state, county, local, town police. That has been going on for longer than the Department of Homeland Security has been in existence. That was going on years ago with the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration, I think was the first major federal agency that began this process. They were providing money, they were providing training, and once money and training come into play, then federal guidelines, and then finally loyalty from the bottom to the top follow fairly quickly, and that's what we're seeing developing.
So, Ed, do you think that this plethora or this whole rise up that we're seeing, do you think this is an attempt to acclimate the American public to this kind of police behavior?
Well, I think that's certainly part of it, because otherwise it would be punished.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if this was something that were completely out of bounds from the point of view of the establishment, the establishment would be doing something to correct it, so they're not. And I think they see two things. First, they're acclimatizing the American people to accept this kind of behavior and therefore essentially to know their place and keep their mouths shut.
Okay, hang on.
And they're acclimatizing
the
police to engage in it.
Ed, we got a break. We got a break coming up. We'll be back in 3 minutes. We'll get back to those two parts that you were mentioning.
Are you looking for a one-stop shop to find all your favorite books and videos? Look no further. Northern Voice Bookstore has everything you need. Hundreds of titles, from self-defense, survival, and financial freedom, to history, politics, conspiracy, and everything you need to know about the New World Order. You can order everything you need on the web, 24 hours a day, at northernvoicebookstore.com. Or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, Post Office Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. Northern Voice Bookstore offers a broad range of different perspectives and believes strongly that the American people need alternative sources of information in order to understand the society they live in today. You won't find a better selection of books or videos anywhere. So make Northern Voice Bookstore your bookstore. Visit us online at northernvoicebookstore.com or send $2 for our latest catalog to Northern Voice Bookstore, P.O. Box 281, Wildwood, PA 15091. And make sure to tell them you heard about us on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Take the heat out of your sleep. The Bedfan Personal Cooling System will work for anyone that is a hot sleeper, regardless of the reason. It gives you a deep, restful sleep, the way nature intended. No more tossing and turning. Say goodbye to sleepless nights. So ask yourself, are you a hot sleeper and really want to sleep cooler? A woman who suffers from the effects of menopause, including night sweats derived from hot flashes, have a medical condition that causes your body to get hot at night, or just want to save money on your air conditioning bill. It works instantly. No tools or assembly required. Don't worry. The bed fan fits short beds, tall beds, beds with footboards, sleigh beds, water beds, and many other types of beds. If you want great relief and total comfort, give us a call at 1-210-632-8280. That's 1-210-632-8280. Or visit our site at bedfan.com. Your provider for great sleep.
Listening to RBN has helped you to prepare for an emergency and invest in the gold and silver markets, but now you'd like help managing your other investments. Would you prefer personalized investment advice? Onesti Investment Advisors can help. Onesti Investment Advisors will customize a portfolio with no conflicts of interest. Onesti Investment Advisors is a fee-based firm. We do no underwriting and receive no commission, so we always look after your interest. The better you do, the better we do. Get diversification by investing in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, ETFs, and more. Onesti Investment Advisors can help fund education, plan for retirement, lower your taxes, increase retirement income, and protect against a falling dollar. You've worked hard for your assets. Former floor trader and certified financial planner certificate, John Onesti, has the experience to help grow your investments. If you're looking to improve your investment results, call or email for a free consultation. Onesti Investment Advisors, 505-296-2453. That's 505-296-2453. Click on our banner ad on RBN or visit our website at onestiadvisors.com. Onesti Investment Advisors, looking after your investments.
All right, welcome back, America. Tim Wingate here on Michael Herzog's American Awakening here on RBN, talking with our special guest, Dr. Edwin Vieira. And we were touching on, and he was going into, before the break, the two reasons that he believes that we're having this plethora of police brutality, and he was suggesting that he believes it's part of the, maybe I could call it, the practice and the pattern of this administration to desensitize Americans to brutality by the local militarized police.
Well, I think this administration has certainly heightened it, but I think it was there prior to this administration. I mean, this administration was not responsible for Waco. It was not responsible for Ruby Ridge.
That's correct.
And we've seen a lot of this at the federal level, and now it's percolating its way down systematically to the state and local level much more than it had ever been seen before. There's a good book that gives an overview on this. A man by the name of Radney Balco wrote it. It's called Overkill, The Rise of Paramilitary Police Raids in America. Cato Institute book, people can probably find that on the web, written in 2006. I say it gives you a pretty good overview of this. I can remember back into the late 1980s and 1990s talking to a number of former police here in the Northern Virginia and Maryland area who had left. These were county policemen who had left county police departments precisely because they saw this kind of thing developing, and they didn't want to have anything to do with it. And they went off into successful careers in completely different fields of endeavor. So it's not something that we can attribute directly to the Bush administration, but the Bush administration has certainly been pushing it, primarily because they're pushing the entire concept of a top-down homeland security structure. And I think it's moving faster and faster because it is tied in not so much to this supposed war on global terrorism, which I think to a great degree is overblown if it's not fictional, mm-hmm. but it's to the appreciation that the establishment has that if our monetary and banking system, which is the most fragile part of their whole structure, if that begins seriously to give way and major economic crises occur, which I think they will, we're going to have social and political crises following that. You can't have a major economic crisis without social and political crises. And they want to be able to control what happens in the streets, as it were, from the top down. Obviously, they don't have enough federal police, so they have to federalize the state and local police. And they've been systematically going at that process for at least 15 or 20 years.
And well, Edwin,
don't you find it ironic that you have this attempt or this claim that we have to have homeland security, but ironically it's actually producing less security and less security in the concept of the Constitution where our rights are being secured?
Well, it's the same ironic situation as with the Federal Reserve, if I may draw that analogy. I mean, they set up that structure to give us scientific management of credit and currency and end depressions forever. and no sooner did they put that in, they had the worst depression the world had ever known. And subsequently, of course, they've been creating the biggest bubble that the world has ever known, which will result in some very difficult economic times ahead. But that seems to be always the way the politicians do it. It's almost a kind of mirror image that they present of what their real goals are, what the real results of their activities will be. But I think that's clear that we're not getting the kind of security the Constitution requires. And once again, it's primarily because they haven't read the Constitution. That's our major difficulty here. You have a set of instructions, and the average person who goes to Home Depot and buys a power tool or a chainsaw, if he doesn't want his fingers cut off, the first thing he does, he reads that set of instructions and he applies it to the operation of the tool. Well, government is a kind of tool, and we have a very detailed set of instructions written by some very wise people who had a great deal of historical experience in mind. It's called the Constitution. The Constitution actually uses the word security. I use the word homeland security, but use the word security in the Second Amendment, the only place the word security appears. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Stop right there, because the amendment goes on, of course. Security of a free state. That's what the Constitution is telling us we want to have, and it is providing the mechanism to give it to us, the security of a free state. That does not seem to be the direction in which the homeland security apparatus, at least at the federal level, is going. It seems to be going in the direction of a police state, a surveillance state, a national security state, if you will. Lots of different terms for it. But it's a state that is characterized not by freedom, but by control and centralized bureaucratic control from the top down. Constitutional says, no, we want exactly the opposite of that.
No, I was going to ask you a question. We're going to be going to a break here in just a couple minutes. And another break, and then we'll be in our long segment here. When during the last century, or even we just started this century, but in the last century, have we ever enjoyed a state that could be, correctly called homeland security?
Well, during the 20th century, I would doubt that we ever had it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there was always insecurity in this country from the time of the. Before the Spanish-American War, from the time that certain elites decided that imperialism was to be the direction in which they wanted to take the United States. We had the Spanish-American War, we had the First World War, Second World War. I mean, we've been on this imperialistic binge ever since the turn of the 20th century. Of course, we didn't have homeland security during the period from 1861 to 1865. Right, there was a major war going on in the country.
That's absolutely.
So it's probably a relatively short period of time from the Constitution in the late 1700s to.
Speaking of very short, we got a break coming up here, so we will be back, folks, in 3 minutes. to continue this discussion with Dr. Edwin Vieira. Stick with us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
The Berkeleyite's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeleyite, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeleyite is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeleyite, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. 9200.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places." People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs. It discusses America and Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715. Or mail P.O. Box 771, Athens, Tennessee, 37371.
Pinch me, Bill. I can't believe it. A few months ago, I couldn't even afford gas for my car. And here we are with season tickets on the 50-yard line.
I know what you mean, John. I remember the day you saw my new car and asked me if I robbed Bill Gates. Our lives sure have changed since we discovered DidYouRobBillGates.com.
I was struggling to make ends meet. Now I've got a new car and a college fund for Lisa when she graduates from high school next year. And I owe it all to you because you told me about DidYouRobBillGates.com.
Hey, John, we all win when the money problems disappear. I want to tell everybody because the more people we have on the success team, the better it works. It's hard for the little guy these days. We pool our resources to level the playing field.
So the more people that go to www.DidYouRobBillGates.com, the more cash for everybody. What a concept.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thank you for listening here today on The American Awakening, and with our guest, Dr. Edwin Vieira, Jr. You know, to save some time, Ed, you wrote in this another wonderful series of articles on News with Views, the leader principle or the people principle, mm-hmm. and you pointed out something. I'm just going to read a little paragraph, and maybe we can get into some of the nuts and bolts about your plan, your idea. You said this. You said that this history, and I'd say lugubrious. I can't even say it.
Lugubrious.
I had the emphasis on the wrong syllable. Basically, it means a painful and a hurtful
right.
history. It can be summed up in the term black hole politics. All unchecked political power gravitates towards a central high point and intensifies, while all undefended individual liberty gravitates towards a low point from which none escapes. And the sequence in this country involves, one, concentration of power in the general government at the expense of the states and we the people, then two, centralization of power in the executive branch, then localization of power in the president, the so-called decider, and finally paramilitarization of the whole apparatus from top to bottom with black uniformed thugs loyal to the leader, while The Constitution is systematically degraded to a largely ceremonial document that controls the procedures for elections of certain public officials and then imposes next to no limits on their behavior. So, we have a fairly astute audience, I believe, people who know what the problem is, and they've seen this rise of a strong, central, almost dictatorial government. And this is also occurring simultaneously in the states and on the local level, while all the while being enforced by this paramilitary police force and the militarization of our local police forces. And you brought out how the Constitution provides the method out of this by really understanding what the term security actually means, and that implying is that it is there to secure our liberties and our freedoms, not for the safety and the security of the ruling elite in this country. So what are the structures that the Constitution provides for us to get back our freedoms and our liberties, Ed?
Well, if you take that phrase from the Second Amendment, security of a free state, it ties that directly to a well-regulated militia. In fact, the Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. That's the only time that the Constitution ever uses the word necessary in relation to any institution. It doesn't say Congress is necessary, the President is necessary, Supreme Court is necessary. The only thing it says necessary to the security of a free state is a well-regulated militia. Because, of course, the Founding Fathers were thinking in a very, what I would say, profoundly federalist mode. They were thinking of power filtering from the bottom up, not being imposed from the top down. And if we think of the two great powers of government in political philosophy, they have always been characterized as the power of the sword and the power of the purse, and ultimately the power of the sword being the more important of the two. The power of the sword, military power, the police power, if you will. Where does that come from? Whose hands are to be in control of it? And the Constitution tells us that. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Period. End of discussion. Now, if we come back to implementation of that question, we look at any state in this country, and we discover that there is really no well-regulated militia according to constitutional principles. And the basic constitutional principles, I point out in that article, the leader principle versus the people principle, is that a well-regulated militia is made up of the vast majority of the able-bodied adults in the community. It's everybody, essentially, who can function in some capacity doing something to provide some element of security from a local basis to the state level, and then ultimately, if necessary, to the national level if Congress were to call out the militia to perform its three constitutional functions of executing the laws, suppressing insurrections, repelling invasions. Now, that's another interesting point. If you look at the constitutional power of Congress to call forth the militia, the Constitution has assigned these three responsibilities to the militia: execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, repel invasions. The militia is the only institutions to which the Constitution assigns that first responsibility, execute the laws of the Union. It doesn't assign that to the
Army. This isn't the guys that are out in camo on the weekend capture the flag, then.
No, those are, I mean, they like to call themselves militia. They're private organizations. I guess they can give themselves whatever names they want. I assume most of those people are acting in good faith. They're patriotic. They're law-abiding. They're trying to do what they think is right. But they haven't come to grips with the historical ties, as it were, to the pre-constitutional period, the period in American history when this militia concept was formed. All militias in pre-constitutional times, in every one of the 13 colonies and independent states, were part of the governmental apparatus. They were part of the self-governmental apparatus. They were an aspect of sovereignty expressing itself in these institutions in which all able-bodied men at that time, because of course women were not legally emancipated, all able-bodied men participated.
they were the ultimate expression of sovereignty, the power of the sword. That is the ultimate expression of sovereignty, all right? If you don't have the power of the sword, you can't make laws. If you don't have laws, you're not in control of your own country. Pretty easy progression, philosophically and practically as well. But if you look at our system now, we don't have that. There are lots of historical reasons for it, particularly after the Civil War, been tremendous bloodshed. People were pretty much sick and tired of military or military-related affairs, and the militia structures that had actually played quite a part in the Civil War.
Yeah. I heard Rick trying to jump in here. Go ahead, Rick.
Okay. That's okay. I mean, I don't want to cut him off. Nobody wants to hear me speak. They want to hear Edwin speak. But I was just going to add that these militia guys running around in all the various states, they're obviously disenchanted with the current government and the way the laws are being interpreted and run. However, if they were enlightened to understand that the real militia is empowered to execute the laws of the Union, they would need only become the constitutional militia, and then if we did execute the laws of the Union, we would no longer be disenchanted with our current government.
Well, that's exactly right, and what those folks don't realize is what they are doing will never give them the lawful constitutional authority to do what they want to have done. Right? They can never gain that by private action. They can only gain it through constitutional action. And I should hope that a lot of those people, because it isn't inconsistent, they can certainly work for what I'm trying to get people to work for while maintaining these private organizations of their own. The two are not at all inconsistent. But they are different. They are separate and independent of one another. And the goal here is to bring into a movement to revitalize the militia those millions of Americans who would never think about putting on camouflage fatigues and running small unit exercises, you know, in somebody's woodland. As I like to say, a well-regulated militia can include Quakers and Mennonites, as well as members of the National Rifle Association. It's going to take in everyone in society who can provide some kind of service to a homeland security program that fits local and state needs. It's not going to be a professionalized group.
Okay, Ed, so how do we start this? What's the basic, maybe the basic outline for this? You talk about architecture of right. this. What would the architecture be?
Well, if you're talking about how do we go about bringing this back into existence, because it is a state institution in every state, constitutionally required in every state, a militia has to be the product of some state statute. Right? It's part of the governmental structure in each state. So we first have to devise, or ultimately we have to devise a statute that will be presented to a state legislature with sufficient grassroots pressure, if you may allow me to use that word, to cause those legislators to enact this particular bill. And I say it has to be done that way because I haven't seen any state legislator or legislature where I would suspect that they could draft this bill on their own. It has to be given to them completely done. All right, how is that going to be accomplished? Well, some people in a particular state have to get together, form political activist organizations, sit down and think through the logic of what's needed in their own local communities and states in terms of homeland security. Now, obviously, it would be similar in all states, but also there would be elements of difference. Certainly the states that have a border with Mexico are going to have quite a different homeland security problem than perhaps Iowa or Kansas or even Virginia might have. So you can think of many aspects there of problems that have to be worked out by people who are sensitive to their own local situation.
And well, I would think that education is going to be the number one tool before we can even dream of going to a state legislature and mentioning the M word. We're going to have to educate the people.
Well, that's exactly right. And I was just going to say that. Putting these people together, identifying them, is the first step so that they can be mobilized and educated on this subject. Why are we doing it? What do we need to do? Go forth and come up with these ideas. Draft a statute. Go to the legislature with the statute. Put on the pressure. Now, my view is this has to be done at a fairly large scale for a number of reasons. First, because, as you said, that M word, not only in state legislatures around the country, but with all too many people in the general public, has been demonized by the media. You start mentioning militia, and they immediately begin to think of essentially lawless armed groups that are engaged in vigilante activities or worse. And that obviously is something that's totally alien to the constitutional concept. So we need that level of education. Secondly, in order to make such a statute, in order to draft such a statute, we have to bring in a lot of information, which I think at this point in time has really been lost, at least at the local and state level. People depend too much on these expert agencies, whether they're the state police, the state Homeland Security offices, as many states now have, federal Homeland Security, what have you. People tend to throw up their hands and say, well, we're going to let the experts do it. That's wrong. Self-government is not a spectator sport. It's not something that you sit on the couch and watch on cable TV. It's something you have to become involved in, and it depends upon a tremendous amount of inputs that can be gained only by the people on the scene. The people in Washington do not know what the problems are where I am in Manassas, Virginia. They certainly did not know what the problems were going to be in New Orleans before Katrina, and they certainly weren't able to handle those problems after the problems developed. Right? We've seen this already. This is very similar to the problem of that the socialist economies always had. They couldn't make rational economic plans because the information necessary to do any kind of economic planning was to be found at the local level where the bureaucrats weren't, right? They were in the planning agencies in Moscow or wherever. They weren't at the local level where the information was available. It's the same thing is true of Homeland Security.
It sounds to me, Ed, like you're talking about local groups of people getting together and not only educating themselves, but their neighbors as well. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, that's exactly right. In my book, okay, Constitutional Homeland Security, I give them a name. I call them Citizens Homeland Security Associations because they are not and would never be intended, at least by me, they would never be intended to be militia groups. That isn't what they are. They're political education and activist groups, the purpose of which is to organize people, educate them, put this information on the table, work out the structure for a proper state statute, present it to the legislature, and then put on the grassroots pressure to have the thing enacted. Now, with organizations of this type set up, obviously you'll have a lot of people educated and mobilized who will be ready to become members of a revitalized state militia when the necessary statutes are passed. And that's one of the selling points, I think, of this plan, is that Edwin Vieira could go to the Virginia legislature with a statute next week and say, oh, I drafted this, and it's a wonderful idea. And my local legislator will say, well, fine, if we pass this, who's going to do it? And I say, yeah, well, I really don't know. You know, it's myself and my two sons, and I guess that's it. Right? But if a group of people come to state legislatures and say, state legislators and say, we have this draft statute. Oh, and by the way, we have organized 7,500 people in the state of Virginia in these little groups all over the state who have worked on this project. And of them, 5,000 are willing to volunteer to be the first members of these revitalized militia units. It's no longer a pie-in-the-sky plan.
Not only that, if you're spread out throughout the state with these groups, you would then have your individual legislators that can be leaned on or lobbied toward, whatever term you want to use, activized in trying to get them to go ahead and vote in favor of a statute such as this. It's really, actually, I look at this as a really well thought out grassroots marketing campaign.
And if you don't mind me dropping something in the Edwin Vieira suggestion box, because I was giving this some thought after I read the book, I was thinking, well, maybe what I need to do now is I need to draft a letter to the common homeowner, a family man, and then go around and start putting them on all the doors in the suburb where I live. Okay. And I thought, I gave it a little thought. I thought, wow, maybe Edwin Vieira should put together one, a universal one that could be put out, say, almost like an article would fill in the blanks for your city name to be put in. And then everyone interested could just print it out and start putting them on everyone's door.
Well, somebody should send me some suggestions for that. What you think?
No, not only that, but let's flesh this out a little bit more just before we go to the break here. Got one more, and that is, why not get a website set up, or even just a blog spot? A website could be set up with downloadable PDF files so that people could fill in the blanks as they needed to.
Step-by-step instructions on how to do this.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea. The problem we have here, or at least the problem I have here where I am, is I am now working on the next two or three volumes in this series.
Right.
The first book, which lays out the sort of the overview of the problem and the overview of this direction. I won't call it a solution because we're not sure it's going to work. A direction towards a solution. It's called Constitutional Homeland Security Volume 1, obviously, The Nation in Arms. Volume 2 is going to go into the principles of the militia that have to be met for a constitutional revitalization to occur. And
okay,
that goes way back into the colonial period.
We'll be right back here, folks, here on RBN. Stick with us here on The American Awakening.
Hi, friends. Bill Bagley from Vital Basics, and I want to send you a bottle of the best-selling supplement Focus Factor absolutely free. Why would we give away a free bottle of Focus Factor? Because we know that if you try it, you'll buy it. Focus Factor has nutrients that work with your natural brain chemistry to support your memory, concentration, and focus. People all over the country say it's the best brain support supplement they've ever tried. Well, how would you like to try Focus Factor yourself absolutely free? No, we're not crazy. We're confident. Because once you try Focus Factor, you'll wonder how you ever got along without it. And that's why, for a limited time, we'll give you a full-size bottle of Focus Factor, an $85 value, free. You simply provide $4.95 to help cover the cost of shipping and handling. Call now for your free bottle of Focus Factor. Call 1-800-518-3796. That's 1-800-518-3796. Limit one bottle per household, please. Again, the number is 1-800-518-3796.
The Berkeleyte's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkeleyte, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkeleyte is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkeleyte, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. 9200.
Attention RBN listeners who have trouble sleeping. If you have tried everything and still have serious problems getting a good night's sleep, then this message is going to be the single most important one you'll ever hear. And here's why. 77 RBN listeners are needed immediately to test a new alternative method of falling asleep fast. And the best part is, this new sleep system produces dramatic results when everything else has failed, including prescription sleeping pills. You see, it works in a whole new way, utilizing special sleep frequencies to almost command your brain to fall asleep fast. And it's easy to use. Yet, because the rules governing medicine in the U.S., no health or healing claims can be made for the sleep system. However, it's still legal to own this new high-speed sleep generator, and 77 RBN listeners are invited to use this system first, before the general public. So, if you're really having trouble falling asleep, simply go to www.highspeedsleep.com. That's highspeedsleep.com. Or call 877-327-0365 and tell the operator you listen to RBN. Again, that's 877-327-0365. 0365.
All right, welcome back, America. Tim Wingate here, sitting in for Michael Herzog on The American Awakening here on Republic Broadcasting Network, talking with my guest today, Dr. Edwin Vieira, about his concept on how to revitalize the militia of the several states primarily by instituting on a local basis. You could almost call it, wouldn't you call it, Ed, almost a study group?
Yes, I'd call them exactly
political
that.
Political Action Committee?
They're study and advocacy and activist groups.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, they're political activist groups because the militia is part of our constitutional structure, which is a political document. So we're talking about something that falls squarely within, interestingly enough, the First Amendment. Obviously, they're looking towards the Second Amendment as the goal of this exercise. But as I said before, you could have a Citizens Homeland Security Association, which is what I call these groups, made up entirely of Quakers and Mennonites and pacifists and people who had no interest in the use of firearms, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, but were interested in providing their services to the community in the best way that they could, consistent with their consciences. So this is something that doesn't exclude anyone in the community. In fact, it's designed to include everyone. And if you study the principles of the pre-constitutional militias in the 13 colonies, you'll see that's precisely the way that they were structured. The only people that they tended to exclude, and they didn't always do that, were the slaves, for obvious reasons. The slaves couldn't all be systematically armed without essentially the end of the slavery system being the result. So what I'm proposing here is not something along the lines of these private so-called militia groups that you see in various parts of the country, but really citizens' political activist groups. What I'm working on now, first book's already out, gives the overview. I'm working on now the second book, which goes into great detail on the specific principles of the militia drawn from pre-constitutional history, the principles that have to be applied in any statute that's going to be enacted. The third book then goes into the consequences of this. If we have one of these structures set up in every state, how will it fit into the constitutional structure? How will it operate? What will be the benefits from a constitutional point of view, from the point of view of return to popular self-government? The fourth book, and it probably won't actually be a whole book because it doesn't have to be that long, will be one or more model statutes. And I'm going to have to pick some states, and the two I have in mind now, one is New Hampshire, simply because I think the political climate up there might be conducive to this project. And second is Virginia, because I happen to live here, and of course I know this state. I hope I know this state and its legal code fairly well, so I'll be able to do that with the minimum amount of gnashing of teeth and pulling of hair.
But, you know, Ed, I heard you say also a week ago on Larry Becraft's show when Debbie Kidd was co-hosting, and that time is of the essence here. Wouldn't you agree? We're rushing toward a tipping point. I think, as you described it, that there's an open window. They're all, leaders.
I think that's true. But you have to be careful here, because we've got to do it right the first time. If one rushes in with something that's half-baked, we're not going to get the result we want. So we have to work as fast as we can, but we have to work as accurately as we can. As cabinet makers tend to say, measure twice, cut once.
Okay, great. Now listen, we're going to go to a break, folks, here at the top of the hour. We'll be back with more with Ed Vieira and Rick and Tim here on RBN. Stick with us.